A franchise was once a safe bet, a family-run business, guaranteed profits, stability, and you're in control, or so it seemed. In recent years, there has been an increasing number of franchises which have collapsed. Back in March, fresh food delivery company Aussie Farmers went into administration. 260 employees and 100 franchisees were out of a job and some in huge debt. An aggressive price war has cost some Pizza Hut franchisees dearly. And there's been a string of scandals which have involved other franchises like Domino's, 7-Eleven and Caltex. Today on Focus, we are going to examine if the franchise model is broken and what needs to change to ensure success. And on the panel, we have Lynn Baikal. She had a Pizza Hut franchise which cost her and her family dearly. And also on the panel, we have Associate Professor Jenny Buchan from the University of New South Wales, the business school there. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Morning, Nadia.
Lynn, now you bought a Pizza Hut franchise in Butler. What business opportunity did that present to you and your family?
Actually, my husband had actually been working for the company for 18 months before that. They were over here operating very aggressively to get WA back on track, and he was a big part of that. And then they offered him the opportunity to open a new store. There hadn't been one opened here for many years. They put incentives in place. They were very encouraging. They were really enthusiastic about what was going to happen. And they pushed quite hard for us to go into that direction. It looked really positive. We had leadership in place that were doing all sorts of exciting things, and it looked really like a great opportunity for us. But what happened along the way is that the leadership changed, the entire direction of the company went sideways, and what we were promised and what we were sold at the beginning is nothing like what actually eventuated.
Okay, I'll stop you there. Just a couple of specific questions. Incentives. What sort of incentives?
We were given a $100,000 incentive to get that store built. So they were quite serious about trying to rebuild the WA market. They were prepared to put money out there to get things happening because they were really keen for it to happen.
And it looked good profit-wise. The location was good.
The location had a good was market exceptional. There. Yeah. We blitzed their numbers within the first week. We put a business plan together initially and they rejected it and said it was over-enthusiastic. And we, by the time we started trading in our first week, I think it took us about a month to hit the numbers that we'd first projected. So, yeah, we were in the right market. We were in the right location.
So when did things start to go wrong?
Very early on. Our shop fit was mishandled completely. The person at Yum who coordinated that put one set of plans to council and one set of plans to the shop fitter, and they were totally different. So on our first day when we were supposed to open, we were in trouble with the council because we were not compliant with their law. And that took years to actually resolve, and it got to being an incredible mess. But they took no responsibility for it, and it was going to cost us $30,000.
And you were responsible for refitting what didn't comply?
Yeah. And they just wiped their hands of it, basically, and said it wasn't their problem.
That was the start, because I understand then there was a fairly aggressive price war.
There was. There were two issues. They ran a campaign in WA called an $8 Any promo, which was basically our core range of pizzas were going to be sold for $8. They promised us that we had complete control over it as a network. They promised us that they would not include our expensive signature range, which is our, you know, prawn pizzas at $17.
The expensive ones?
Yeah. They promised us all sorts of things. At the same time, they ran a simultaneous trial in the ACT market at $4.95 pizzas. And the reason they picked the two markets is because they're small. So they could actually, you know, run a test and see what would happen. But they promised us that we had control. When it started on day one, our signature range was in there, our prawn pizzas, everything else was in there, and we were losing money hand over fist. We begged them to stop and they refused.
So you were selling a $17 pizza at $8 or $4?
Yes. $8. At $8, yep.
Can you make a profit on that?
Absolutely not.
And I imagine that everyone was going, that's a bargain, I'll buy that.
Of course they were. Why would you buy that when you could buy a cheese pizza? With, you know, you're going to come and buy a prawn pizza instead of a cheese pizza when you can get it at $8.
So how quickly did things then start to turn? Because I assume you had no say over that. You had to follow that rule?
They refused to pull the promo. They told us all the advertising had been done. They wouldn't let us stop. And we were showing, they had access to our numbers. They knew exactly what we were losing every week. And we were losing thousands of dollars a week and they knew it and they wouldn't stop.
So Because my understanding too, you were turning over at one point $1.5 million
Our last year of trading, we were on track for a $1.5 million turnover.
And yep. You made no profit from that?
No, because then they having run the ACT trial at $495 which turned out to be a complete fizzer, they totally lied to the national market. They came around and simultaneously met with every state market, sent representatives on the same day so that we couldn't get in touch with each other. And they told us it was a successful trial, selling pizzas at $495 And we just, you know, argued with them till we were blue in the face that that couldn't possibly be the case. You can't make money on a $4.95 pizza. And they told us that it had been successful and they were going to roll it out nationally. What we found out later when it went to court was that they'd actually paid the ACT franchisee $180,000 to cover his losses. So this supposedly successful trial was a total scam, and they blatantly lied to the entire national market and then forced us into following a $4.95 price point, knowing it was a failure.
How long did you manage before you had to count your losses and walk away?
For us, it was 5 months, and we didn't walk away. They terminated us because we stopped paying our franchise royalties, along with every other person in the market.
How much did you lose?
Probably a good $500,000.
What impact does that have on your family?
It's devastating. Absolutely devastating, because we worked so hard. We built that business from scratch. I had to tell 35 people they were out of a job. We tried fighting it legally. We had no money to do that, and somebody stepped in and tried to help us. They kept telling us that it was completely insane, that they wouldn't terminate us, it wouldn't happen, it wouldn't happen, it wouldn't happen, and sure enough, it happened. And then I had to tell my staff, I'm really sorry, we've been trying to fight this, but there's nothing further we can do.
And did you ask for any financial help from Pizza Hut?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the response was no?
No. Because we owed them money and because we had stopped paying our franchise royalties, we got to the point...
You were in breach.
Yeah. We actually got to the point where we had to cancel the direct debit that they had in place, which puts us in breach of our franchise contract. So it doesn't matter that they're breaching the contract and forcing us into that position. We were then technically in breach.
Associate Professor Jenny Buchan, is this a familiar story?
It is a familiar story. Sadly, in not good franchises. There are some good ones, but reading through all the submissions to the most recent 2018 inquiry, and there's some pretty terrible stories, and certainly Lynn's story is not unfamiliar.
Now, obviously you're talking about this federal parliamentary inquiry, which we'll talk a little bit more about later, but is there a familiar theme here? Because obviously in Lynn's case, the goalposts changed. Is this usually the undoing? This kind
There's
of
several familiar themes. One is that the franchisor has no fixed obligations and lots of discretions that are provided in the agreement, and the franchisee has to do what they're told, and they have very little discretion and very few rights. So that's certainly what Lynn encountered. The franchisor has every opportunity to change the goalposts, and that can be change in price point, change in product line, or, in fact, change of franchisor owner. So their franchisor can sell their business to a venture capitalist, and they can change the goalposts. And the franchisees just have to go along with it.
Is that fair?
Nobody said it's fair. I don't think it's in good faith either. And the fact is that's just how it is in franchising.
Jenny, tell us a little bit more about what sort of companies own franchises? Who are they?
There's a whole mixture of different types of companies. There's proprietary limited companies, so small or large, not listed companies, not public. There are public companies. There are trusts, which you can't find out who's behind them. There is occasionally an individual. And in the case of 7-Eleven, that's a master franchise for Australia from ultimately a Japanese brand. That's one of these interesting companies that hasn't had to file annual returns with ASIC since 1994. They're a special kind of company that, because they were compliant in 1994 and they haven't made major changes and they fit the criteria in the Corporations Act, it's really impossible to find out about them.
Right. And the model, how does the model work? Do people, and Lynn, please jump in at any time, do you pay royalties or a fee? Do you give a percentage of the profits? How does it work?
Okay. Basically, the idea is that a person establishes a business with a good idea, they prove it up in the market, and that's where, and then they offer franchises for sale to franchisees. But that's where we've got the first problem, because according to the research that Griffith University does, 42% of franchisors have not been in business 12 months before they offer franchises for sale. So they can't possibly be a proven business. And so assuming they are a proven business, they offer franchises to sale, and franchisees pay to establish their own franchise outlet. They pay a franchise fee, which is the right to run the business under the name of the franchisor for a certain number of years, say 5 years. They pay all that money up front, so they've sunk all their investment at the front. And then on an ongoing basis, they either pay a royalty, or if the franchisor is a supplier, sometimes the franchise won't have a royalty, but the franchisee will be paying, purchasing all the goods from the franchisor, and the franchisor will be taking a cut on all those purchases.
And that that royalty, is that based on, and Lynn, tell me what the situation was there, was that based on turnover or profit?
Based on sales.
It's based on
whether you're losing
sales.
Money, it doesn't matter. They get it based on the sales, which is why they pushed the $4.95 promo, because sales went through the roof.
Right.
But profit disappeared.
Mm. And that's a flaw.
Yeah, absolutely. But for us, I mean, we bought into a Pizza Hut franchise. They've been around a long time, and we thought, okay, this is a good established company. So, I hear what you're saying about franchises that are, you know, they've only been around 12 months, and I get that. Mm. We bought into an established company that had what we thought was a good track record. But, you know, when there was a change of leadership at the top, we've since found out that the CEO in America basically played monopoly with the Australian market. They treated it as a guinea pig market, and they admitted to doing that because it's a small market to them. So they could play their games and test out their theories and, you know, whatever. And he's gone on record. There's an interview where he did talking about the fact that he makes big, bold decisions. And it's like, well, that's great. Do it with your own money.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Lynn. Angus and Robertson's another one that you would have should have been able to trust. They'd been in business for over 100 years when they failed.
Yeah.
So there's no such thing as a terrible new franchise or a fantastic old one.
Yeah.
Angus and Robertson, though, that was also part of the online phenomena, do you think, as well? As markets change, they've got to change with it, right?
Yeah, there's factors in there. But there's, when you're looking at what happened with Pizza Hut, there was a deliberate decision to force us to sell our products below cost. They forced the entire national network to trade into insolvency. And that's just insane.
Well, it's irresponsible.
And there was a class action which failed. Yep. Why wasn't it successful?
Well, funnily enough, when it failed, somebody said to me, did the judge get paid off? Because it was the only thing that they could possibly come up with to understand how we failed. trying to prove lack of good faith, trying to prove unconscionable conduct in court is impossible. As I just said, if they forced an entire national network to trade into insolvency to sell our products below cost, and that's not considered unconscionable conduct, it's not considered a lack of good faith, what is? So our court system is rigged in favour of franchisors. They know that. They have the power and the clout and the money and the time. It took 18 months for that to get to court. We actually tried to get an injunction in place to stop the $4.95 promo in the first place. Our marketing guys, our representatives tried to stop it. The information magically got leaked to Domino's, and Domino's suddenly started selling $4.95 pizzas, and all of a sudden they had a reason in court to say, well, we've got to be able to compete. The injunction failed. So, you know, we've been all the way to the High Court on this, and the High Court has said basically that franchisors are untouchable.
Jenny, why is that? Because there's been a few legal action cases over the years, and they seem to be very hard to get up in court.
Yeah, franchisors are supposed to follow, and franchisees are supposed to adhere to the franchising code of conduct. And unfortunately, the good faith provision, which was introduced not that long ago, requires the parties to act in good faith, but it's got a huge gaping hole in it, because it says that they don't have to act in good faith if it's in their best business interests not to.
Yeah.
So go figure, why on earth would you put it in there if it's going to be, you're giving a get-out-of-jail-free card for any kind of thing that you can call an important business decision, which is no doubt part of the reason why the action, the class action was unsuccessful.
Yep.
There were actually three judges on that bench, and it was argued absolutely brilliantly by Pizza Hut's silks. So they were up against a real challenge right from the start. Pizza Hut had, of course, all the evidence in the world and lots of time to put together their reasoning, to reverse engineer it if they had to.
And that's part of the problem, that, you know, they've got the money and the time to wait. Franchisees, when they're in trouble, don't have that time and money. You know, when you're drowning in debt, when you're going under, you can't afford to wait 2, 3, 4 years for the court to get to hearing your story. And that's what they rely on. So franchisees just don't have the money to go to court either.
Now, what about political help? We've had a few inquiries. Obviously, there is another federal parliamentary inquiry underway that comes to Perth, I think, 6th of
September. No, they've cancelled it. They're not coming to Perth now because we don't matter.
Oh, I didn't know that. The last I'd seen, they were.
Yeah, no, they've cancelled it with no reason given.
And were you hoping to go before that parliamentary committee?
Yep.
You've made a submission, I assume, a written submission.
Yeah, I put in a submission, which is a public submission, and then I was contacted to see if I was interested in appearing at the panel. I said, absolutely. I had originally said to them, I'll come to Canberra, I'll come to Brisbane, I don't care, I will come and talk to you about this. And then they said they were coming to Perth, and then I got an email saying that they're not coming to Perth with no reason for why they're not coming.
Well, that's a real shame. Had you asked for help, did you go to any of your local politicians to see what interest there was in this situation? And because, and before you answer that, Jenny, have there been more franchises collapsing in recent years, or has it been steady? Because I seem to be reading about more and more of this. Has there been more in recent years?
I don't think they're increasing at a greater rate. I've got a huge database of failed franchisors. Mm. Unfortunately, what happens when the biannual survey is reported on, survey of franchisors, the current number is reported, but you don't, underneath that, there are ones that have fallen away and failed or stopped franchising, and then there's others that have come into the market. So it's a really difficult to pick up a clear picture. In France, there was some research that said that something like 54% of franchisors were not in business after 10 years. So we're no longer in business, which is, they've either failed or they've decided to stop franchising, which is pretty bad when you consider that some franchise agreements last 25 years.
Right, right.
So the numbers don't quite add up.
Yes. Thank you for that. So did you go to politicians?
Absolutely. Lee? We contacted Kelly O'Dwyer, who was the Small Business Minister at the time, and I couldn't even get a response from her office, not even an acknowledgement that we'd contacted her. I tried Christian Porter, who was actually my local member and the current Attorney General, and I couldn't get a response from him initially, and then I finally did, and it was basically along the lines of, well, Parliament can't interfere in an active court case. And I said, I'm not asking you to. I'm asking you to look at franchising in general and look at the nightmare that is unfolding, not just for us but for everybody that's out there that's struggling with this stuff, and do something about it. And I mean, that was 4 years ago. So as far as I'm concerned, they did nothing.
Lack of interest?
Yeah, it's too hard. It's too hard. And so when you look at the Franchising Council of Australia, has politicians at the head of it or ex-politicians, you know, there's political clout in this that, you know, interest groups and so on, they tried to stop the franchising inquiry from going ahead because their argument was, if we make it too difficult for franchises in Australia, they won't invest here. And my argument to that is if you can't stand up to scrutiny, get lost. We've got too many thugs here already. We don't need any more.
On the text, 0437 922 720, Matt says the Ultratune franchises are very unhappy with the Mike Tyson advertising campaign but are unable to stop it. Aside from the financial considerations, you need to make sure you agree with the values of the franchisor. Head office can make you buy from suppliers, and head office gets a rebate from the supplier, not the franchisee. They can make you buy equipment as well, and they get a kickback for that as well. That's from Matt. An interesting insight. Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah, totally.
I have to say, some franchisors, that you can call it a kickback, but they actually get their suppliers to pay for the annual conference, they pay to put all the franchisees up at the annual conference. So some of them actually use that rebate for correct purposes, and obviously many don't, but some do.
Let's look at due diligence. How do you do that? And is that the problem here, that maybe some franchisees don't do their homework?
Look, that's kind of the argument that gets put out there every time it goes bad. And I think, you know, there are some franchisees who go in a little bit naive or don't quite understand things as they possibly should do. But I think on the whole, most people, when they're investing a large chunk of money and, you know, their time and energy and wanting to make a success of things, they do their due diligence. But it's not worth 5 cents when the company that, you know, you've investigated and you've done all of this stuff, when they change everything after you've signed the contract. So due diligence, you know, it's a term that gets tossed around a lot, but it's actually not the fault of the franchisee when the franchisor changes things radically and lies to you.
Because you get disclosure documents, don't you?
Yes, you do.
Yeah, but that doesn't give you the full... What does it tell you?
It tells you, you know, how things will operate and what, you know, your rights and responsibilities are and all those sort of things. It's a legal contract. And, you know, you do go through it and you look at it and you're okay, well, you know, there's some things that are not in my favour there and there are other things that are. But at the end of the day, you assume that the franchisor that you're signing up to would be looking at their franchisees and saying, we want them to be successful. Because if they are, then the franchisor is successful. That's just basic logic. But it doesn't seem to come into the picture half the time.
Yeah, Jenny, due diligence?
Yeah, due diligence is incredibly difficult to do well. It costs money, and the disclosure document that's provided is pretty comprehensive, but it's probably important to look at what it doesn't include rather than what it does include. So what it doesn't include, for example, is an organisation chart of the whole franchise network with every single party identified by role and by full legal entity name. If you had that as a potential franchisee, you could then do a credit reference search on every single individual. And if there was a single person who had a bad credit record, you could make a choice to move into another franchise. You wouldn't want to go near anybody with a bad credit record. As I've said before, for example, with 7-Eleven, super difficult to actually get beyond the information that's provided by them in the disclosure document. A lot of the information that's provided is not possible to verify objectively. So, and there's no public database of all franchisors. So once you start looking at one, you can't then compare it with what might be available under another one or what the obligations might be under another comparable one. So if you're looking at Pizza Hut, it's a very expensive proposition, for example, to compare it with Domino's or Crust or any other pizza brand, because for each one, you'd have to start a separate inquiry. If there was a public database, you or your advisors could just look on that public database and run some sort of quick early comparisons and give you a much clearer idea of what you were getting yourself into.
Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth and on the ABC Listen app.
Nice to be with you this morning. Lynn Bayer-Clay is a former Pizza Hut franchisee in the studio with me, and also Associate Professor Jenny Buck. And we are talking about franchises and the problems with them and what needs to be fixed. So let's talk about what needs to change. We have a parliamentary committee looking at it. We hear that it's decided not to come to Perth. What needs to change to make this a more level playing ground?
For starters, I think that company law needs to be applied evenly. For me, as a director of the company that we set up to start our business, we were pursued by the ATO, we were harassed by ASIC, there are now black marks against our names that we can't remove, and that's all on public record. And yet company directors of franchises can just disappear. Yum Brands has actually sold off the brand here in Australia, so they're no longer part of Pizza Hut, but they've just disappeared off the scene and gone back to America, and for some of them actually been promoted. So,
and you're left with a bad credit rating.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been destroyed. Yeah. Yep.
Jenny, what changes are needed?
I think it's a really good point about the Companies Act. Currently, franchising is regulated under the Competition and Consumer Law, which completely focuses on consumer protection and competition issues. Many, many, many years ago, there was a West Australian case, Casnot, which argued that franchises should be treated, given a prospectus in the same way as when you're buying shares in a company. And that would have seen franchising rest under the corporations law, and that would have actually provided a whole lot of a different focus entirely. So I think it does need to the corporations law needs to now have a role in regulating franchising alongside the competition and consumer law.
Has that been resisted in the past?
Oh, yes, it's been resisted all right.
As far as the consumer law goes, you know, we went to the ACCC and begged them to do something about this when it was all unfolding. But as far as I'm concerned, franchisees in Australia actually have no coverage under consumer law. We fall through the gaps. We actually have no rights. And so, you know, they will say, oh, yeah, you have these rights. But if nobody's going to stand up and protect them, if nobody's going to do anything when they're breached, we really don't have any rights. And the ACCC has run away from franchising as fast as they can because they don't know what to do with it. They can't deal with how big it is. They can't deal with the issues. And as far as I'm concerned, they're a toothless tiger in this whole issue. They've really done nothing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this report. What does the future look like for you, Lynn?
For me, you know, my family is pretty tough. We're pretty resilient and life has gone on and we've tried to put this behind us. The only reason I did a submission to the inquiry is because, you know, I feel this stuff needs to be aired and something has to change. You know, we've been saying this for 4 years, so none of this is going to impact or change our situation in terms of, you know, compensation or anything else. We're done and dusted. But I desperately hope that no other family has to go through what we've gone through. And I met with, you know, ex-franchisees from Aussie Farmers Direct. We did a newspaper article a few weeks back and I met with a couple of the families. And I'm watching them where I was 4 years ago. So life does go on. You know, you go and do other things, but, you know, it has significant impact. And I only realised recently my mother is quite elderly. We had a power of attorney in place and we've just realised now because of all of this, that power of attorney for me has now been revoked. So I actually can't help my mother as she's needing to move into a nursing home.
The ramifications are wide and varied, aren't
absolutely.
They?
Absolutely. All because of lying people that got away with what they did.
Well, best of luck to you, Lynn.
Thank you.
Appreciate you sharing your story this morning and also to Associate Professor Jenny Buchan. Thank you for your time.